You're listening to CGSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Sego. Buju Anim.
Danacha. At Anzenu Shukwithan.
Tonse.
Ay, Inuhadikay.
This is Words and Culture, a series on Indigenous languages, funded by SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Sego, sewegwego. Jokdagoy Yanyats. My name is January Rogers, your host for Words and Culture. And since coming back home to Six Nations in the summer of 2019, it seems, but there is also evidence of areas of my life becoming elevated. I'm the busiest I've ever been in my career as a writer, educator, and media producer, but also how I operate as a Haudenosaunee person. I am truly grounded here on my land, and more importantly, I am received by the spirits and energies of this land. I am a custodian, not an owner. The land provides everything, all the special instructions of how to operate and conduct ourselves here. And that may sound philosophical or kind of like poetry, but it's those notes of poetry that are embedded in the language. We hear it in the English translations of our language.
My guest this week is the personification of all the things I just talked about. Gatsia Hondo, although a young man in his early 20s, holds many positions of cultural responsibility, one of which is being identified, or chosen, if you will, to be a longhouse speaker and someone who is knowledgeable enough to be called upon to conduct ceremony in community. He visited this auntie at my home on Six Nations, where we talked about his ambassador duties and much more. I'm going to ask you to teach me how to say your name.
Gatsa Hayando.
Gatsa.
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 Hayando.
Hayando.
Gatsa Hayando.
Gatsa Hayando. And what does that mean?
Fires here and there.
Oh, yeah? And that what language is that?
Mohawk. Kanyagaha.
Nice. Which languages do you speak?
Which languages do I speak?
Yes.
Okay, I speak English. I speak Kanyagaha. Kanyagaha is my first language. And I've been taking some classes learning how to speak Gayokono, Cayuga. And being from Quebec, I just know a little bit of French. Just a little bit, though.
But you're not really from Quebec, you're from Ganawage?
I'm from Ganawage,
nice. Yeah. Nice, good. Yeah. How did you come into being speaking Ganyagahaga?
Well, it's my first language. Both my mother and father are second language learners. And my folks are, their names are Skatahadi Lazar, that's my father, and Tatum Yerihawi Macumber. Okay. Is my mother, and they worked really hard studying the language. They've done it for many years, and they both became teachers at some point, and they still teach to this day. Now and then, my mother back at home in Kahnawake, she runs a language nest in Kahnawake. She established, I think one back in 2004. Up until 2006, and then reestablished in 2014, and has been going ever since.
What's the name of her language nest?
Yagwahwadziradadje. I think she got that inspiration from the Maori people that she had met a long time ago, who run their own language nest out in New Zealand, which was like the first language nest that was made for language revitalization. So a language nest, if like for people who don't know, is a home-like environment, kind of just like gearing away from the school aspect, and it's geared towards mothers and sometimes fathers with young children, and helping them raise their children to become first language speakers, while at the same time the mothers are learning to become speakers themselves.
When you mentioned that you were speaking Cayuga, how are you learning Cayuga language?
I'm currently enrolled in Six Nations Polytechnic and a Bachelor's of Arts in Ngwehunwe Languages. As a part of that, they have a Mohawk stream and a Cayuga stream, and I ended up taking the Cayuga stream just so I can have something new to practice. And, I'm interested in the linguistical aspect behind it, so I thought it would be really cool to learn how to speak this other language.
The language journey for you has been, how has it been? Easy, hard? Are you finding that now you're in a position where you can share as a language teacher?
It's been, people will say that I've had it really easy, and I guess that's half true. I was able to pick up a lot more on the teachings, and I was able to pick up a lot more on some of these speeches that I would hear. I would understand a good portion of it, but I don't know everything in the language, and I don't know everything in the culture. You know, I'm just learning myself. So I've had some of these people who taught me, who are elders, and then some of these people are second language speakers who have taught me some stuff that I didn't know about before, and I always want to give them credit for the work that they do teaching me, because at some point, despite being a first language speaker, I ended up taking a Mohawk course out in Kahnawake for 2 years, which is an adult immersion course out there, and I wanted to learn more about the linguistical aspects, which was really interesting, because I learned about how Mohawk is a polysynthetic language. Polysynthetic meaning you can put pieces of a word called morphemes to create one complicated word to convey an entire sentence in just one word. And there's it's not just Mohawk, but there's many native languages that are like that.
Right.
Yeah, all across North America. So Mohawk is one of those that has these complex meanings.
When you say you're able, as a speaker and a learner, you're able to understand the language in speeches, do you mean in Longhouse?
Yeah, and Longhouse is one of those places that I would hear a lot of these speeches that are being told. And I grew up going to Longhouse back home in Kahnawake. And every now and then, my family would travel out to Akwesasne. And for a little while, my father was living out here. We went to Mohawk Longhouse here in Oswego for a little while as well. And I get to hear these different speeches that are being done in our language.
I'm wondering if you could talk to me about the importance of language and being a culturally involved person. Is it absolutely necessary, or you think that a person who is not a language speaker can still be authentically involved in culture?
Coming from where I come from, it had been rather dormant on culture for a very long time in Kahnawake. In recent years, probably in the past 30 years, it had become something very big for people to follow culture out in the East where I came from. In terms of learning language, a lot of people have held on to that. Some of their families have held on to it. And I guess some would say that our community was more fortunate than some others were. And I'm grateful for that. And a lot of the elders that I'm friends with back at home, a lot of them are they don't follow the culture all that much. They attend church more often than not, and it's not their fault or anything like that. That's just kind of the way the circumstances came about in that way. But a lot of the younger generation now are becoming aware of the things going on around the world, and they want to find a way to be connected somehow. People will travel around and define culture in Longhouse. I know people who want to practice that more often. I wouldn't say that it's absolutely you have to change everything you believe or anything like that if you want to be a language learner. But for me, learning the language, I can go like wherever I can hear the language. I can go to church just to listen to some of their church hymns that they sing there. And I know a lot of friends who sing, and they sing all these songs, and they show me some of these books that they have. And I have a book with church hymns in it that has like all these complicated Mohawk words in there and really old Mohawk words. But more often than not, I do mostly Longhouse, the work that I do in terms of like spiritual beliefs and stuff like that. That's what I follow. And I put through ceremonies for people. I put through different speeches, and I put through funerals. And I've helped out for many years. Some of my brothers have done the same. My father has done that, and my mother helps out with that.
In your language, tell me how old you are.
23.
How do you say that in your language?
Dawasa asa ni dawaja.
You're just a baby. Yeah. You're just a baby doing ceremony. This is so great. I wanted to ask about that confluence of church and culture and language, because of course when we think of church and the relationship Indigenous people have, it's very ruinous to Indigenous culture. So when you talk about church, and maybe your grandparents went, you're saying, or the generation before your parents went, they're mostly like church people. Were they able to bring the language into, like, was that like the first kind of example we saw of reconciliation?
The first example of reconciliation?
And I don't even really believe in reconciliation, but what I'm asking is, would that be, would you say that that would be the first example of the blend of the settler nation spirituality or religion and the Indigenous culture? Would that, is that where that happened?
Like the way it was like integrated to me, it was like with Christianity being such a big part of our history, as it was like forced upon us, or many of our people have gone and they followed that, and the way all the circumstances that have brought us to where we are today, with everything that happened with residential schools and everything like that, there's no question about it that there's a lot of awareness going around. So everybody's talking about it now, where not that long ago nobody ever talks about residential schools and all the trauma that we went to, and then nowadays there's becoming more awareness out in the media, you know, and you see Every Child Matters all over the place, people wearing those the orange shirts, and you see people laying shoes across in front of a church, and Every Child Matters and all that other stuff, and it's becoming very present. And really in the last 2 years, it's becoming a very big thing. And it's good because people are becoming aware. And that's what you would need, is for people to become aware and to know that this is what the Canadian government, this is what the church had done to our people. You know, for so many years, over 100 years of residential school, this is all the stuff that they've done to us. And it's not even that long ago, you know, our grandparents were in there, you know, and many people who are still alive, they're all survivors of all that stuff. And now, with the stuff going around, there's this movement of reconciliation. And I don't believe in it either. I think it's all, it's fake, much of it. But like anything that we can get from them, it's never going to be enough, I don't find. However, the amount of money that they're going to send to us or to our schools, to our community, however the amount, they're never going to stop paying back. because of all the trauma that have been dealt with us, not just with residential school, but with land loss and all these other forms of genocides and all these wars that have been fought and all these laws and these legislations that have been made without our consent or without really discussing with us about all that stuff. We've lost a very significant amount. There's no question about that.
So we're talking about the colonial religion and indigenous spirituality, but then of course there's the political, which gives the understanding of our governance, Haudenosaunee governance, and that comes from also the land and the sky and all kinds of different sources, you know, that we learn from. And I'm just wondering, politically, how are we maintaining our governance through language?
That's very complicated. Like the way everything has changed for us and have morphed. You know, there's a lot of division within our own people, right? Because there's so much division going on, there's a lot of people that went on to believe different things, not just religiously but politically. You know, so people have gotten integrated into this society, this kind of like foreign society where they take part in it and they cast in voting for the government or whatever. Or it's like there's like many shades of gray with that, you know. And even in terms of like the Confederacy, and people are in big dispute about like what the Confederacy really is and who should hold all these positions and who should establish everything, what these communities can provide, you know, and it's very messy.
Someone else who has made their way home to Ganawagi Mohawk territory is Hamilton-based singer-songwriter and visual artist Tom Wilson, frontman for Blackie and the Rodeo Kings and Chunk House. We're reaching way back into Tom's vast musical archive to bring you this week's track, That's How I Walk, from the 2005 album The Shack Recordings he made with the iconic Daniel Lanois. Enjoy.
Here comes the longest night. Here comes the pain. Here comes the longest night. And a love for you that'll never come back. A love for you that'll never come back. That's how I walk all over this world. It's been the hardest ride. It's been a trip. It's been the hardest ride. And when I walked out, I never looked back. I walked out and never looked back. That's how I walk all over this world. That's how I walk all over this world. That's how I walk. That's how I walk. Dream about my credit card. Dream about my kids. Dream about my neighbors. And I woke up, I never looked back. I woke up and never looked back. That's how I walk all over this world. The telephone, I lost my grip. Took back the words I said, but when they left my mouth, they never came back. Left my mouth and never came back. That's
Rogers, and I'm speaking with Katia Hondo. I asked him what advice he would give to people who are just starting to learn Kanagahaga.
I mean, the one thing I can say about the people who are getting into this, to all of this for the first time into their language journey, I would just tell them patience is very much key. You become patient and you just stick with whatever works for you. And I would tell people that there's a lot of work that goes into it. Sometimes it takes very many years for some people to learn, and it's not going to happen overnight. So that's why patience is very much key to all of that. And it's very complicated the way the language is set up, and there's so many layers and layers about what our way of thinking is, not only in terms of culture, but in terms of custom, and that our language conveys a very different custom from the way the English or the French or the Dutch or Germans and what they think. Yeah, so we have a very different way of describing different things and different objects, and it's very abstract. And in a lot of our ways, and a lot of our ways are like that as well. And it's very important to be aware of all that, and a lot of those could be the reason why some people will have a really hard time getting into the language. Some people will get into the language and they think literally,
right,
how everything translates to English, but it doesn't all work like that. It's very complicated and conceptual. It has all these different layers that you would need to be aware about.
Right.
You do your search into what our language is and try to get what some of the patterns are. And the language has a lot of different patterns. And once you start to get it, then it starts to really click. And I know some people that have a really hard time for a very long time, but then only recently it starts to click, and they're like, okay, now that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And this makes sense, and this makes sense, and now I can just make all these words,
mm-hmm,
not really make them up, but put them all together, polysynthetically. And find these different meanings, and then start to make these different sentences, and then it starts to make sense.
You know, the immersion school in Kanagahaga that you mentioned earlier, that 2-year program, mm-hmm, that you did, that's been going on for a long time, hey? Like many years.
Yeah, here's the thing about these classes. Some of them, they got different numbers of classes, and they got different numbers of people, I mean, in each class. So some of them would have like up to 20, some of them would be just 15. But they would accept like certain people who they can consider is the most eager, and it's like, this person is the most eager, that person is really, and just like who we might think are the most likely to excel and all of that. For a lot of them to come out at the end of 2 years, not all of them come out speaking a whole lot, and there's some of them that do come out speaking a whole lot, and I think it just depends on the individual and their circumstances and the way their minds are, mm-hmm, and how they learned,
mm-hmm,
and based on their experiences as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's and that's like a whole complicated process that they would all go through, each and every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And I think it's good that that there is a community that has that would have a program like that,
mm-hmm,
that can be up to 2 years. Basically, it's like you're going to high school, but the only subject you need to worry about is language.
Amazing.
Right? And it's every day, so you can expose yourself into that.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, growing up, the best way for me has always been speaking at home.
Mm-hmm.
For the children, or for parents who want their children to speak, is that when the children are growing up and they get used to something like that being at home, it's very, it can have a very big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And with me growing up, one of the things that have helped me when I was like 4, 5, 6 years old, is having my mother's language nest.
Yeah.
And there's a reason why my mother had this language nest, is because she wants to raise her kids to be first language speakers. And when I was growing up, I had English. I did. But I was more used to speaking Mohawk. And then when it comes to me being at family gatherings or different events where it's all English, she says I was like in a shell or something like that, and not wanting to really interact with folks or anything like that. And then she established this language nest, this idea that she had for this language nest, making it kind of like grandma's house or whatever, and raising kids in a home environment. And then she told me, she was like, you really came out of your shell being a part of the language nest, because now there are other people there who speak the language. There are other kids that you are surrounded by who are speaking a language. And there are elders that help out as well, and they're speaking the language. And it just comes natural. Let's say it wasn't something that was forced. It was just something that was there. And I was just immersed into that. And there was a few other kids that were immersed into that. Even today, I hear some kids that have gone through that and really have like a good amount of awareness in our language and a good amount of base, because they have it so early on in childhood. Right. Now they have this strong base in the language, where if later on they want to take a course or anything like that, they would have like a much easier time than some others would.
So community is important.
Community, yeah. That's really what it all comes down to. Community and just people taking care of each other in that way, and just having a place that you can go to every day where you can hear the language and just work with people, you know. The language nest, you know, really it's a home environment, you know. And then it's not just being at home and sitting in a classroom or anything like that, but really it's just it's going out on walks, or going out building fires with people, or doing stuff in the home and cooking and doing all these different activities. It's very important, but they give you a feeling like you're at home, you know, and it gives these kids a feeling that they're at home.
Nyawagua Gatsia Hondo for such a great visit and chat about language and culture and his personal language journey. When I reflect on our time together, I am reminded that there are 20-year-olds and then there are 20-year-olds who are so grounded in who they are as Haudenosaunee people that it feels like I'm talking to someone 50 years old because of their knowledge and level of cultural confidence. Before Gatsia Yondo left, I packed him a container of my homemade corn soup, a recipe I have been perfecting since coming home. And I wanted to share the best of what I could offer to this ambassador for all that he has shared. And now, this is the point where I get to try my hand at some words in Ganyageha. Let's start with Aguaego. It means everyone. A-gue-go. Aguaego. Everyone. Onguanyungwe, which means our medicines. Onguanyungwe, our medicines. Yawego, it tastes good. Yawego, it tastes good. And I hope that's what Gazia Hunde said about my corn soup. My name is January Rogers, your host for Words and Culture, the Haudenosaunee episodes. Until next time, be well and take care. Anagawahi.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin.
Soko seni denit e ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.